Following is an unrehearsed interview with Russell McClanahan by Libby Frost with the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted on July 13, 1978 at the Estill County Public Library in Irvin, Kentucky. McClanahan, will you state your full name and where you were born and your date of birth?
Well, my name is Russell McClanahan, Jr., and I was born in Falmouth, Kentucky, and that's Pendleton County. And I came to Estill County at the age of approximately 2 years old. We moved up here. And my father was employed with the L&N Railroad at that time. And some of the things I remember about the railroad, of course, were, I imagine you've already talked about, but this is the main occupation at that time in the county here, I'd say, or this area. And we had a real nice life and a good family life up until I was 15 or 16 or something. Then my father went into the theater business here in town. And we've been in it now 37 years or more, I guess. And something very unusual about that, we took the old livery stable that was on Main Street here and made it into a theater. It was an old livery stable.
What was and, the name of it?
The livery stable?
Mm-hmm.
The Camels owned it, Camel family. So I'll probably call Camel's livery stable, I imagine, but it was out on Main Street. And it was very unusual. We tore that out and had to make it into a theater.
Is this the first theater in Irvin?
There was another theater here before that, but it went out, and there wasn't any here then when we put that one in. There was no. They were silent movies. And
they were what kind of movies?
No, before that was a silent movie. You know,
silent movies.
They just played the piano and reading, and everybody read all at the same time. You know, it's very. I just barely can remember that. But we put in, when we started, we had sound. Ours the first sound theater, I'd say, in the area. And so my father got out of the railroad business, and we worked as a family in the theater business. And since then, we've had as high as 3 theaters in this area. And it's dropped back down now till we own 1. I don't know what you, I can tell you some unusual things. The river was very attractive to me as a young boy. And we've always had lots of boats on the river, and we made our boats then, a lot of them, barges and so forth. I don't know of any other person, I'd say that I'm the last person ever brought a log raft down the river. I don't remember anyone else ever bringing a log raft down the river, but to my knowledge. Well, it was up, and I'll have to tell you about how we got these logs. Up around Beattyville and above Beattyville is where we picked the logs up, and then we brought them down to Irvin here.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought them out at the upstation Camp Creek. I went upstation Camp Creek about, just 200-300 yards, and the road crossed there, you know, over here going to South Irvin. And we drug them out there with mules. And I had them sawed up and built our house that my wife and I built when we first married.
So that was the logs were used just for your own
mm-hmm.
personal use?
And then I sold some of them, but most of them were used for just building.
Where'd the logs come from?
Out the bottom of the river. We would find them. They were called sinkers. And they were 75, 80 years old or better, and still quite a few in the river. And it's kind of funny how we'd find them. It was an old gentleman that I used to live on one of the houseboats that I had there, and that's all he'd done for a living, is he looked for sinker logs. They would break loose from the main raft, you know, they had little pegs that drove in them, and they'd drop and break loose, and they were heavier logs, like oak, walnut, hard wood of different types, cherry and so forth. And they'd break loose and drop and sink to the bottom. Well, the river would roll them around, and usually roll them to the side of the river, like the water would flow around and push them over to that side, and then they'd just lay there. And the silt would cover them, and then the tide come, wash the silt off. And the way we'd find them, after you would look at the water a while, you could tell which way you could tell about where the logs would be. And you had a spike pole. We had a large spike pole about 15 foot. And at the end of it, we had just a steel pin, and we'd just push along the bottom until we hit one. And then we could feel up and down it and feel what size log and everything. And then we had a little work boat that we built. It was about 15 foot, I guess, maybe 8 or 10 foot across. Had a little winch in one end. And we would had a way we drove those spuds, I'd have to show you. But we would, just like a spear gun like, we'd hold it on the end until we got there, and then we'd put it into the log, and then we'd just turn it up and down and drive this other little corkscrew type pin into the log and drive it in there real deep. You could just drive as deep as you want to with that motion from up in the boat. And then we'd crank it up with the winch, and we'd have to hold it until it come out of the mud. We wouldn't want to crank it too hard. And we'd just hold a while, then crank a while, and after a while it'd come up. And we'd raised hundreds of logs like that.
And you raised them in the creek or in the...
In the river.
In the river.
In the river, the main river.
Uh-huh.
And then we just, we'd have to buy some. Of course, we had a couple of barges that we could hook several around. But if we got too much of a load, too many logs, we'd have to buy floaters. We'd buy cedar or poplar or something from people on the bank. They'd just give them to you then. And we'd cut them and drop them in the water to tie the other logs to, so they, like one log would hold up four or five, you know, on it, two or three on each side, because it didn't take much to hold them up, just drop them up above the water. And then we'd make a raft out of them. And I'm trying to think, I don't know how many logs we did bring in the last raft, but I had an old paddle wheel boat, and it was a two-deck paddle wheel that we'd made the boat and put it together, and it had an old one-lung engine on it. And we brought that load of logs down the river with that, that raft of logs.
Mm-hmm.
Frank and I did. The last raft of logs I remember that ever came down the river that I know of.
Mm-hmm. When was this?
Yeah, let's see, I'm having to think. See, I was about 23, I guess. And I'm 58, so that would be, 35 years ago. And that's the last log raft that I know of coming down the river. It's very unusual because on the end of the logs, I don't recall the names of some of them now, but they'd have initials branded in it. You know how they branded logs in, or are you familiar with that? They branded them with
the
had branded, or they hit them and brand them. And these were registered over in the courthouse. But of course, they had been abandoned, you know, over 75, I guess they'd been in the water 75 years or more, some of them had. And I remember looking up some of the brand marks of what the companies were. And there's a fellow over here in Powell at Clay City right now that has some of the brand marks and so forth. And he's maybe, I wish I'd have sold some of the butt ends off, but I didn't, you know, just kept them for the brand mark. But they sawed up in some beautiful lumber, and it didn't hurt the lumber a bit.
Haven't been in the river that long.
Mm-mm. No, it was just sound as it was. It was real, real nice lumber. And we mm-hmm. lined our house with it and built most of our house out of cherry and walnut. So. some other unusual things about the county, I remember. I can just remember the streets being... No, not paved. They were just mud streets. And then I can remember the sidewalks. A lot of them was board sidewalks. And then they eventually worked into brick walks, and then eventually into concrete walks where they are now. trying to think of some other. I remember horses being tied in town here around the courthouse.
What kind of a job did your father have with the railroad?
He was a federal air inspector. I'm trying to think of my. He's in the mechanic line, you know, where they had a lot of air on them, and he was a federal. He said a federal air inspector on the railroad. I think he was a mechanic, some kind of mechanic, but that was another title he had too, that he inspected all the engines that went out up and down the holler, that hauled coal and so forth. That was me. But they did haul passengers in, and I remember some other very unusual things about passengers, those passenger runs they had.
What is that exactly?
They had some trains would run to Lexington back regular, like once to twice a week. Excursions, we called them then, I think, and I'm trying to think what they called, 50 cents maybe or something. And they'd go over at Lexington early in the morning, and then they'd come back of a night, maybe 10 or 12 o'clock at night. And that'd give everybody all day to shop in Lexington. And going over, going over mostly because it's daytime, they'd stop everywhere to pick up anything anybody had. They'd just run down the track and they'd flag them. Chickens, milk, or little calves. I remember they'd put on, I used to stick my head out the window and, you know, watch them pick them up. And just anybody had anything, they'd run down the track and flag them. And if somebody's walking down the track or across the field, they'd run and flag them. They'd slow up and let them hop on. They'd ride.
Is it the track now? From
the same track. Well, they have changed some of it, but some of it, most of it's similar.
What communities did it go through?
It'd go through all. Well, it went through West Irvin, then over here, and then it went down through. Going to Richmond, some of those little towns of Richmond. Some of those tracks have been pulled up. And then, of course, all the little farmlands and things that went through and houses by and so forth. And then in Lexington, of course, right in the middle of Lexington, they had a big depot there. They've torn it all down now. It was right in the center of Lexington. And I remember where it was over there. And, of course, you'd come back at night and get on the train, then go back. And, of course, they'd be sick and drunk and everything else on there, some of them. And unusual thing because they were so concerned with everybody, you know, just doing little things like, I'd say, pick up chickens or eggs or something.
Did who saw to it that these were sold?
They just had places they deliver them. I mean, our drop them off, they put an address to drop this off up to so and so or something. They just drop them off at stations, you know, and say, I don't know. They had cream stations in that bought cream and so forth. In fact, we had one of those over here to when we owned the Colonial Hotel. We had a cream station, and all the farmers brought their cream in, and then the big companies picked them up in trucks. I don't know if any of those they have around anymore. But you could just weigh a little amount or big amount or whatever amount you had, and they had little cream stations around that picked up cream. I don't know about the chickens. I do remember they used to ship whiskey that way in barrels, in little barrels, by train. And the men would get so aggravated because somebody would drill a hole in it, you know, and drain out all the whiskey. And it wouldn't be money. I'm sure they got rid of that pretty quick, but I don't think that lasted long.
Was there a distillery around here? Or?
I don't recall them being I'm talking about they would ship whiskey in.
Oh, I see.
You know, it would be shipped in. And I do, I'm trying to think, I don't recall any distillery here, though, in this area. But I do remember they used to ship whiskey in. They had another excursion, I remember they run to Natural Bridge. And they had a big wooden platform and they had square dances on. And as a child, they would, this is way back when I was I'm talking about 8 or 7 or 8 or 9 years old. My mother and them would all go up around Saturday night. And they would dance, and then about 12, 1 o'clock, they'd all catch the train, would wait there, and they'd come and bring them all back. And it'd be all hundreds, you know, people would go. Different than they do now, you know, the train would wait on them, or it'd be there when we'd turn around and come back ready to leave.
Was it a park area then, or natural bridge?
Well, as far as I can remember, it was a public area, because they were just there from everywhere, you know, people were.
Does the train run up there now?
No, they've cut all that out through there now. There's nothing through there now. None of that. You can't even get right on the train, you know, now. I remember Mr. Benton, a friend of mine, he was quite a bit older than I was, but I was acquainted with him, and he was telling me about something very unusual here in the county might be interesting to know about that doesn't happen today. There was a Hawkins that was hung out here in the Sweet Springs edition. What do they call that area now? Well, it's just the spring area out here at the edge of town.
The Estill Springs?
Estill Springs, mm-hmm. All right. That's where they had a hanging out there once. And he told me about it. He went to see it. So this is just secondhand, you know. He told mm-hmm. me, and I'm repeating it. And he said that they had, got this man, and they had convicted him, and he was to be hung the next morning. And he said all night long that they could see lanterns and, you know, people coming over the hills, and wagons. You could hear them just coming. They came all night long over this in this area to watch the hanging the next morning. They brought families, people, children, everybody. And they all went on the ground, brought lunches, you know, had picnic, dinners, and everything out there to watch the hanging. He was out there from daylight on, just well all night. And he told me about watching the hanging and what the man said and so forth.
Who was them?
Hawkins.
Hawkins.
I don't even call the first name, but
do you remember what time this was?
No, I did have a book on that, on all the dates and everything about mm-hmm. him. But he told me what he said before he was hung, but I don't recall the exact words. But anyway, this is kind of the essence of it. He said he took a hold of Raylan, looked out over the crowd, and told him, I want to warn you all against whiskey and women, or something like that. And he said that when they hung him, they dropped him through, and he said he remember watching that rope twist went back and forth. He said the cat died, you know, where they twisted him back and forth, back and forth. And then all of a sudden, he said the crowd never said, and just very quiet. But he said that there were so many there, and it was children and everybody that watched it, which I thought was very unusual. Today, you know, you can't even get into a place to see anybody killed or executed. So that was so unusual to then. They didn't exclude anyone. I'm trying to think of some other unusual things in the county. I thought, I do remember the courthouse being tore down. There's a little knob at the top of the courthouse, and it had several bullet holes in it that people had shot full of bullet holes. That was kind of unusual, and they tore it down. Is there any other question maybe that you could...
Theater. Why did your father decide to go into the theater business?
I don't know. He had a good job. He held a job several years until we got the theater going good, I'd say. We were in the theater business, I'd say, 3 or 4 years before he did quit. Never got him to quit, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. I think my brother and I talked him into quitting because he was doubling up too much, the work and then theaters. And they got to be a very profitable thing. And we could see that we could make enough with the theater. Mm-hmm. And so we finally talked him into he had enough time to retire, and I'd say that we finally talked him into quitting.
Was there a show every night, or how was
we run a show every night then? Yes, every night, and then On Saturdays, we started 10 o'clock in the morning and ran from 10 o'clock in the morning to 12 that night. Ran 14 hours on Saturday. The pictures then seemed to be much, much better than they are now. I don't know, maybe it's because I was younger and enjoyed them more, but they were of different caliber than they are now. The scenes and so forth, I might give a little illustration of it. None of the main players drank. They'd go in the bar and they'd always just order milk or sarsaparilla, I remember that, or something. And there was no women involved in their lives except through marriage, you know, and things like that. And so the morals of the show then, I say, were much better than they are now. I don't know whether that's good or bad. That's controversial, of course. But they had serials and so forth, and people would watch them constantly. And I do recall some things that very interesting about the serials. There was women have children, and they'd never miss a serial. They'd have the baby sometime during the week, and here they come with the baby the next week.
What kind of serial? What do you mean by that?
Well, they'd have a continuous thing, like it'd be a little part of Tarzan, for instance, one. And then it'd show him thrown over a cliff, look like there's no hope. Mm-hmm. And then it'd black out. Next week, continued. Well, all week long, you'd be worried death. He's killed, you know who he was. Next week, come back, and he fell through the trees and caught into a limb or something, mm-hmm. you know, this type of thing.
Would they show two or three movies in a night or serials?
Always had just one serial, and then we'd have a double feature most of the time, and then a comedy. And I'd say we worked in from then up into the peak of the theater business. And then it started dropping off as soon as television got in. My theater business dropped off. We have fair crowds now at times with good pictures, but of course theater business is nothing compared to what it was.
Did you run the projection?
Yeah, I could do any part of it. I used to break in the operators we'd have, and then of course my brother and I would run the take up tickets or sell them or operate or any part of it. We've done any part of it. And then we got into the finance business and several other business. Been in the supermarket business. We've had three of those too. And I eventually got lined up into what I think suits me best is being an artist.
How did you happen to?
I don't know. I
discovered this.
It was very unusual. I just started. I wasn't even interested in art at all, and I just started painting. I don't know. Somebody had a little set, and I just started. And I could see things, and I immediately just started painting it. I've been very fortunate. I've painted all kind of mountains. You know, I'm starting on some series of things now in this area that I'm painting up. I've been very fortunate selling everything that...
When did you start painting?
About 6 years ago. Well, let's see, about 3 weeks ago. I sold a governor's wife couple. I'm very fortunate. I mean, I've been very fortunate selling paintings. I've had good luck with them.
What kinds of things do you paint?
Mostly scenery, and just mountain scenes, different type. I really enjoy painting those.
Around river
scenes, yes, river scenes, mountain scenes. I go to the ocean a lot. I've traveled quite a little bit. I've painted in several foreign countries, I sell quite a few seascapes. I don't know whether I sell more seascapes or landscapes, but I'd say run pretty close to the same.
What kind of materials do you use to paint with?
Well, I paint on linen, on canvas, and I paint in oils. The medium I use is oils. I think that has suited me better than anything that I've been in, although, like I say, when I was a boy, I was so like the river so much, I used to do a lot of what I was telling you, logging on the river, and then I've done a lot of trapping on the river. We used to go up and do a lot of trapping, stay out for a month or two at a time and trap on the river.
Whereabouts? Yeah. Around here?
Up the river, just above the locks, up between here and Beattyville.
What would you trap?
A muskrat, mostly, and mink. And they got
where'd,
just about...
Where'd you sell them?
Well, we had several companies we'd send them to. Other usually dealers come through we could sell them to. And then later, I think, we sold a lot to Kelly. That was a fellow here in town that bought a lot.
But were there lots of muskrat?
Yes, we caught quite a few then. There was lots of them then.
Just wild?
Mm-hmm. They were just wild. They was really quite a few of them. Yeah, I've skinned many of them. They're very interesting. They brought good money then, compared to what things are bringing in.
Do mink live around the river too?
Mm-hmm. We didn't catch too many mink. We caught a few, but mostly muskrat. Yeah. That's what we caught.
Are there any? Are there a lot of them still?
There's quite a few. Yeah. I talked to some fellows this year that trapped some. They done had pretty good luck. I don't think their hides bring as much, you know, compared to how things have gone up.
How much could you get then?
Well, I remember, of course, now I'm talking about way back when money was money, 75 cents, and then a dollar and a quarter, and then it got up to about two and a quarter. And I don't think they bring over $3 or $4 now, see. So then $2 and a quarter was just about a day's work, you know.
What, did you camp out up there? Or
no, we had a houseboat. We were up on the river on a houseboat and had a paddle wheel boat that we made, and we pushed it up the river. And we'd go up and just stay, we had just like living at home. We had stove, everything, just camped right on the river.
Is it gasoline-powered paddle
boat? It's gasoline-powered, mm-hmm. Little engine, we had gasoline-powered. I used to go out, that was one of my, I just enjoyed that so much. I wished I'd have painted then. I really had got some pictures.
How do you know where the muskrat or the mink are?
Well, they usually have a slide that comes down the river. I mean, come out of the cornfield or wherever they're feeding. And I'm trying to think of a saying. Did you ever hear a saying, slick as a muskrat slide or something? Well, it is as slick as they could be. And they would be a slide come right down, and you could just, and you'd see spot one just in a minute. And there was a slide. Well, you could look at it and see if it's pretty slick. And they must just get the top and come out. They'd come to the same spot all the time. They'd climb out different places, I guess, but they had a slide they'd come down. And right at the bottom of the slide, you'd set the trap. And you'd set it and then put the chain out so that when he hit the trap, he'd jump, but he couldn't get to the bank. You'd stretch it, you'd have a little forked stick, you'd put it in the end of it so he couldn't get the chain off. And then the only way he could jump would be out in deep water, and then he'd drown. When he jumped in deep water, the trap would pull him under and drown. So they say nowadays it's a cruel way, I guess. But
how many traps did you have working?
Oh, we'd have like, in a day, we'd have 40, 50 traps you could run easy in a day, 50
you
traps.
You check them every day then?
Or? Yeah, we'd run them every morning, set them every night. We'd run them every morning, set them, reset them, you know, and sometimes go back in the afternoon. But of the nights when they would come early morning, mm-hmm. and we'd go back during the day and set them.
Did you live on the houseboat?
We'd live right on the houseboat. Yeah, we'd live on the houseboat, well, 2 or 3 weeks. We'd take supplies with us, and we'd eat meat, a muskrat, young ones. They were good eating.
Who did the cooking?
Well, he was married, Frank was, and his wife done the cooking. And we would just trap. I was a young boy then, and I'd say in his 50s. And he was living on my houseboat, see, and I'd just go with him. It was very interesting. He taught me a lot about I wouldn't drink the river water, but he would. he drank river water all his life. Of course, we make coffee out and everything, but he'd just go out and drink river water.
What would you do, boil it first?
I'd boil it if I was with him. I'd always boil me some water and kept it in the jug. And if we had a spring close by or something, I'd go get water. But I wouldn't drink their water. But he did. He didn't bother him at all, him and his wife.
Was there much traffic on the river then?
There wasn't hardly any. Very rarely did you ever see anybody on the river then. later on, there were some barges that ran here then, but that particular time, there wasn't anybody on the river. Mm-hmm. Just go forever, and you wouldn't see nobody.
Side two of an interview with Russell McClanahan.
Something that you can kind of get find out about.
Who taught you how to skin a muskrat?
Well, Frank Anderson. He's he taught me how to skin them and put them on boards. We used to make little boards to put them on. It's a very simple operation. Split them down across the back legs to one leg to the other, and just skin them back and pull them right out across the
skin
off. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, split them across the back leg, and skin them down, and pull off. Just cut. Tip the nose off and leave them on. And then we had a rounded V-shaped, similar V-shaped board that we put them on and skin them down tight. Different sizes, you know, they all pretty close to the same size muskrats were, unless you get a little one, kitten or something. And then we just pull them backwards down over that through the fur on the inside and the hide on the outside and just air dry them. Just let them sit. You scoop up and have them, and boards be sitting everywhere full of, you know. You never see that no more here, I don't guess, in this country.
So then after they dried, what did you do?
Well, we'd just take them off the boards then, and just leave them turned out, and they just stack, see, and you could just, you could get a coffee sack full of them. You had quite a little bit of money involved.
What about the minks? Was that the same?
The same thing, same way. They brought a little more money, but they were, of course, rare. You wouldn't catch them as often, you know. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't catch them, you know, near as many mink, of course. It would just be kind of a rare thing. You'd catch one maybe every 2 or 3 days or something, you catch a mink. You wouldn't have over 4 or 5 mink. Or you'd have like 100 or 130 or 140 muskrat hides. You'd have 4 or 5 mink. That'd be pretty lucky to even do that, so you'd have. But out of 130, 40 muskrats, you wouldn't have over 4 or 5 mink. There's some things they used to do here in the county that was kind of interesting. They used to have people come through and sold chairs. I haven't seen that in years and years. And they would had cane bottom chairs they sold. And people that didn't have anything to do, they would just go and make cane bottom chairs. You could have a little lathe that you work with your foot and turn the rounds and the back and so forth, and you could put them together, and they had, you could strip bark off the trees, of course, and make bottoms in the chairs. And they sold those here, like they'd sell them around 50 cents, 75 cents, and a dollar. It's been 20 years since I've seen a chair of any type sold around here that anybody's made. That's something lost, that's gone.
Is it most local people?
Local people would do that, yeah. I remember people used to do it, you know, just make a little money of it. I've seen so many things lost like that, that people seem like they don't depend upon themselves no more. They depend upon the government or somebody else to support them. Used to be, just like we'd go up the river, we'd just take with us what we needed, and salt, pepper, so on, and we would, we'd eat muskrat, or we picked a lot of course, certain times of year, we'd pick a lot of greens, you know, we'd pick Shawnee, and
what's that?
Well, it grows wild in the woods, and you could use it for lettuce, just like lettuce, you could just pick and eat. We have a lot of wild greens. Have you ever picked any wild greens and eat those? Well, you do that quite often. And mushrooms, generally. There's a lot of wild mushrooms around here we eat. That's very interesting that we pick. We call them dry land fish. I mean, the people who live in this area. Mm. And at certain times of year, they pick those, and they're real. There's nothing like them. You can't buy them anywhere in the world. You have to go pick them.
Why? Well, they're called wild. Area where?
No, they just, they're a wild mushroom, and they're a brown mushroom that's pretty tall, and if you ever have anybody show you, you can distinguish them real quick from a poison mushroom. And they roll them in beaten eggs and dip them in flour, and there's nothing tastes like them. They don't have nowhere. You can't get them anywhere. You can't find them anywhere. You can buy a mushroom, but not the wild mushroom. And then that's the same with greens. You know, I guess you've eaten poke or shawnee or dandelion. Did you ever eat any of those? You'd have them. Oh, my. Well.
What'd you do?
You can eat all that. You used to make a lot of medicines and things, roots and things. Sastra's tea, I guess you drink that, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Gee whiz. Well,
what'd you do?
That used to be our tea instead of coffee, yeah. Like they had.
They just, what, boil the root or what?
Oh, yeah, just boil the root. It makes wonderful Sastra's tea. If you haven't eaten, I see it on the market today, but we used to dig in the woods. I might tell you another little interesting thing I remember about, they call poor man's coffee. Might come in effect. Might be useful today.
Right.
They would take meal and would parch it in an oven and in a flat pan and stir it, keep it stirred until it, I don't mean get burnt, but it would go brown, turn brown, real brown. And they let it get real, real brown, just like roasted. And then they would take it and use it just like coffee.
Have you had some?
If you run out of coffee, that's mm-hmm. Yes, I've drank it. When you run out of coffee.
Is it black?
It would be dark, a brownish look. Of course, it wouldn't taste as good as coffee, but it would take the place of coffee whenever you didn't have coffee. We've done that up the river, and people used to do that. But we had Sastra's tea and so forth. We, you know, kept back or run out of coffee or something. Yeah. Man.
What'd you do without television or radio or?
Well, that's unusual. I don't watch television too much now. I'd rather read or paint than anything. But it was amazing. People entertained themselves in with things they would do. They would make things. The children all made their own toys, and the father made them for them, sleds. I'm just naming some various things. Anything that they wanted, slingshots. I remember we used to have a lot of slingshots, and we may go out and look for half a day to find a good slingshot fork that we could use, you know. Instead of BB guns and things like you have to go to Kmart somewhere by now, we used old inner tubes and cut up and make slingshots. And of course rocks are available everywhere, and if that's what you use then, it didn't cost nothing. We played mumbly peg with knives. I remember that was a game we played. Never see that anymore. The girls played hopscotch. Jump the rope. If you still don't ask me.
Mumbly peg. What kind of knives? Jack knives or?
It was just a regular knife. It's something else. I've always carried a knife all my life. Never remember being without a knife. Never. I was going to show you how we used the mumbly peg. Usually a short bladed knife with the mumbly. This one wouldn't work too good. A shorter blade on it. And the way they would do this, stick it in the ground like that, and you take and flip it. And the way it stuck would count so many points. Like it sticks straight up. It would count 75, hit like this, maybe a certain way, if it stuck like this, a certain amount, 25, 50, or 75. And then you'd play mumbly peg to whoever won a certain, whoever got the late 500 first. Off. And marbles, we played marbles all the time. Nobody plays marbles anymore. Mm-hmm. Never seen no marbles. That was quite a game when I was a boy, just marbles. We had little stone agates, and we had all kinds of marbles that they had.
Where'd you get the marbles?
Well, we'd buy the marbles from store, you know, and then but it was quite something to have marbles in. Everybody played marbles. And the girls, like I say, skip rope and played hopscotch, and I'm trying to think of some other games that they, and the boys played marbles, mumbly peg, and then We just had games in it. We made up ourselves and played, and they've quit that. They depend on other things for entertainment. They depend on other people to entertain them, it looks like. I don't know. And we've lost a lot, I think, from what we, our heritage was. They've lost the ability to walk into the woods and make, be satisfied and make their own way. We've lost the ability to be content. We want more. It doesn't make any difference how much more. What is more? It's more, more, more. You know, I know a lot of wealthy men. I've never seen one with enough. Then a man is contented, have a good day's work, good meal, good family. I've said this sometime. We didn't know we was poor till the government come in and told us. Then when a man had a, when I was a boy, if a man had a corn crib of corn, he could make his whiskey. He could fatten his hogs. He could make his cornmeal. And he done all this himself. And there's something else, too, that I might brought to my mind there. We used to never buy meal. We'd always have certain corn we'd raise, like we always raised white eight row. And I'd go through it by hand, pick it and select it. And we'd shell it and take it to the mill to be ground. You never paid for having your meal ground.
Where was the mill?
Well, they had them several places here then. I mean, I've gone to water mills, but finally got so they had what they call a grist mill. They was a gasoline operated mill. There were several of them around this. There was one in West Durban. There was one in South Durban. And it was a living made by the men. They ground meal. And the way you'd take like a bushel of corn to be ground, and when he get through, he'd take a toll out. He had a big cup. He'd just take so much out for grinding it. That's the way he was paid. And then he sold the meal. People wanted to go buy a meal. They'd go buy a meal from him. You didn't pay him in money. You just paid him. He'd take part of the meal. That's very unusual nowadays, you know.
Were these mills sometimes also distilleries?
No.
Of course, this
no.
was probably during.
No, never. Yeah. I've never. Prohibition. Don't remember any. Yeah, don't remember any distilleries. This is. Yeah, I don't remember any distilleries in this country. People made a lot of their whiskey then. I never did drink the mountain thing. I've tasted of it and drank a very little, but not too much. I never did like whiskey. I never did like the taste of it. I never did like the effect. I got sick once on it, and that was it. It didn't take me long to catch on to that.
What was special about this particular corn that you
Well, it was
made?
White. And the white corn is not as gummy. It's more mealier, and it's drier. And it made much better meal than a yellow corn. Some of the hybrids we have today make a wet, moist like meal, and it's not as tasty, it's not as good. But a white corn made just a wonderful meal. And then we've had a type of cornbread we made that they don't make anymore, just made out of hot water. And we'd had something that, of course, everybody killed their own hogs in. Everybody, just about. And they rendered their own lard. And they had cracklings. You know what cracklings are? Have you ever eaten any cracklings?
No, I've never eaten them.
Well, they'd take cracklings.
What's left over?
No, they'd take, like, they would cut the fat of a hog up and render it. And then what was shriveled up and just left was called cracklings. They were very tasty. Real, real good. Well, you buy them in a bag now called those meat skins. Did you ever eat any of those? Like potato chips, they come in bags now.
Yeah, pork rinds.
Pork rinds, yeah. Okay, that's the same thing. That's what they are. That's the same thing. We used to have those in Boyle, but we made our own like that. Mm-hmm. And then they'd crumble them up in the cornbread, and they were delicious. We made a lot of our own drinks and everything. I remember when Kool-Aid first come in, I thought that was it, you know. But I was trying to think of some things that they would. We done a lot of things on our own, a lot of canning, of course, and so forth. I guess some of the country does now, but not as much. We're more dependent today than we were then. Each individual home or each farm could stand on its own some, quite a bit. And we've lost that. And I don't like that, because it makes us more dependent upon. We were dependent upon each other then, but we lost the ability to survive like we should.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
Estill High. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was Irvin High then. Of course, we've gone into Estill High. It's been united now with Estill, but then it was called Irvin High School, and much different than it is now too. I remember it's much difference.
You said, was it your father or yourself that owned the hotel?
Our family owned it. Mm-hmm. We were incorporated.
Was this an old hotel?
It was the oldest in this area. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I might tell you something very interesting. Where the AMP store is now, we owned that once, and it was a stagecoach stop there. And my brother and I tore that down. And it was very interesting. We found quite a few things in there, and some old pennies and old coins and things we found there that were very interesting.
Before the AMP store was built?
Yes, we built the AMP. Yeah. And it was very interesting, some of the things we found in there, and old documents. And something else, I recall in mind, my brother, of course, is a judge now, county judge. And in the basement of the old hotel there, one time I remember going over some old things they threw away. And they had, I give them to Neville Shackman. He published it in the paper in Lexmeter one time. They had given a man 50 cents to whip a slave, and they'd given a man $1 to kill for killing wolves and so forth. It's very interesting, you know, where the court had mm-hmm. given people money to somebody to whip a slave, and then for killing wolves and things, they'd given like $1 or 75 cents or something. So those, I wish I still had some of those things, but those are some things I remember reading on some documents.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other thing that you can think of we might go into? I don't know.
Getting back to the hotel, when did your family buy into that?
We owned it about 15 years, I guess.
Has it always been a hotel?
Yes, to my knowledge it has. Henderson's owned it now. We sold it, 10, 12, maybe 15 years ago. I don't call the dates exactly.
When did you enter politics?
I'm not in politics. No, no, thank you. I'm not a politician. I know Cracker Bayon County, but I wouldn't have any political job.
Are you a Republican?
I'm a Democrat.
Democrat?
Mm-hmm. Registered Democrat. But I usually vote for just if I know the individual, I pay no attention to politics. I vote for the individual and for what I think he can do. I think we should have political parties. I mean, we have to have, you know, in order to have good races. But I vote, and I think most people do today, I think vote that way.
You mentioned your wife was an artist
mm-hmm.
also?
Yes, she's an artist.
What's her name?
Dolores, and she started painting after I did. And she liked it so well that she's give up golf, bowling, and everything else, and paints. She's painting right now.
What kind of things does she paint?
She's real good with portraits and flower arrangements, any kind of still life of any type. We have people call us and want us to do so many different things. We're working on one now. It's very unusual. people are calling and wants me to paint one of Lucifer falling from heaven, you know, when he was thrown out of heaven, when God threw him out of heaven in the beginning. And so we have completed that. She's finished putting little finishing touches on it there in the studio now.
How do you go about deciding what to put into a picture like that?
Well, it's easy. If I'm painting, I just go out and look at anything. Anything's a picture, just about. And very interesting, the least little thing, just a little flower out of the crack in the sidewalk. I might tell you, give you an example. The governor's wife bought a painting from me, and it was so simple. It was some sunflowers in a garden, and the light was shining through them, and it's a beautiful breaking of light through the sunflowers. And I just painted that, and she bought that. It doesn't have to be anything large, just some small thing, or just the simpler you can make things, it looks like the better it is. And kind of like life, you know, the simpler you make life look like, the better it is. It gets very complex sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever study?
Yes, I've studied. I'd say I studied with Russell May about, let's see. I spent 6 weeks with him and painted 8 hours a day for 6 days a week. Solid. So that's when I went into painting.
Did you have a style of your own?
I do now. Most people that paint have to go to someone that's good and learn to paint, and then it takes several years to develop your own style. But I am into a style of my own, yes. But that you create that yourself. It's something that you drop into yourself, and you can tell when you drop into it. It's very interesting, and a lot of you come in it, and you do things that you couldn't do with the other. Do you paint or
no?
Yeah, it's one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my life, I believe. I used to fly a lot. I'd say we had some of the first planes that were around here, airplanes.
Where did you fly out of? Where's the nearest airport?
Well, we just flew out of Pastures.
I see. Okay. When was this?
Well, oh, that's been years ago, too. It's been 25 years ago, I guess we flew. Then, you didn't have to go through all the procedure you had to go through now. He just learned to fly with a friend, and then we got in the plane, and he said, "You think you can handle it fine?" It's about like you learned to drive a car. I've been driving a car since I was 12 or something. That's why we learned. When I don't remember getting driver's license, they just automatically give them to me. I drove before they had the driver's test. And so I flew before they had that. And so I just bought me a plane, and we flew. Flew all over the country, everywhere, and just landed everywhere. And then I went over after I found out what they had to have a license. Well, I went over to Lexington and got my license, but I had to spend 6 hours, I believe, in the instrument time and so forth, which wasn't hard, you know.
Do you just fly for personal pleasure?
Yeah, just pleasure, yeah. So, it was a lot of fun. Enjoyed it a lot. But not as good as painting. Mm-hmm. Skin dived a lot in the ocean. That's very exciting. I spent a lot of time on the ocean. I spent, I guess, 12, 15 years on the ocean. Of course, I like water down the river. And I spent a lot of time on the ocean, and I was by the ocean.
What were you in?
I've been on fishing boats. I've been on, I've been in hurricanes. I've been in, done a lot of skin diving on reefs and things. I've just done a lot of fishing in the ocean. That wouldn't pertain to here, of course.
Were you in the service?
Yes. I spent, I was about 20 months in the Army. I was in the Signal Corps. It's connected, I never did leave the United States, but I was in the Signal Corps. I went to school quite a bit. And it was about over time we got be trained up pretty good. I did help construct a couple of radar towers in Florida and one in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. But I wasn't in the action of any type.
How has Irvin changed since we were
well,
when you first remembered, rather? To the railroad brought your father here. How has that changed?
I'm trying to think what kind of a change. The people are fairly much the same. The community is the same. I'm talking about in honesty and people at work and people in and out of trouble and so forth. And I'd say how they get along together and so forth. I'd say the community is pretty much the same. But our standard of living, of course, has gone up, and more people are leaving the county because of the fact there's not anything here to do. All the young people have to leave the county. There's just hardly anything here for them to do. And our small farms are dying out. I see that. Used to be people peddled on the street groceries. Like garden vegetables year-round. Year-round all summer when they had gardening. And now you have to call, and I'm going out to Mrs. Rose this afternoon. She called me. She's an old-timer that's raised lots of garden. And she called me and they said, "Russell, I don't have much left." So they just come out here and get it. And you never see anybody on the streets anymore, that hardly have any vegetables or anything for sale. One of the main things when I was a boy, I was thinking about that, that caught my eye was an ice wagon. We don't have any more ice wagon. The kids all followed the ice wagon and would chip ice off and eat it. It was just like ice cream then.
This is in the summertime?
In the summer. And then the wagons that would bring vegetables in town, like out of the garden, had big long tongues stick out the back of them. And the kids would all jump right on that, and the man that was driving it wouldn't notice you. You could ride a half block before he'd look back and see you, and then he'd make you get off. But
these were
way back
trucks
this
or?
No, this was pulled by horses. And
what
I remember some of those things, boy, I think.
How did the Iceman operate? What was his business?
Well, he had he went to every house, and they'd have a sign. I remember he had 25, 50, 75, and 100. And you could turn the sign up whichever way you wanted it, whatever amount you wanted. And he'd look up and see that, and then he'd chip off.
And a sign on your house?
Yeah, you'd have it on the porch. You could hang it up with the Iceman in the morning. He'd just look up there on the porch, and it'd be a 25, and whatever amount you want, just turn that sign, that part up. And the blocks came, seemingly like about 200-pound blocks. And most people got 50 pounds. That's about the average ice box held. And of course, we have come from icebox to where we are now. That's another thing. But
how did they? Would he break up the ice then? Or?
He had a little ice pick, and he would chip it. And there was little ridges in the ice that would mark it, like a 200-pound block, and be ridged for the 100. Then the 100 was split in two for the 50s, and then the 50s had a little ridge in them to show where they chipped down through it. For the 25s, and the ice man was very popular at that time.
No, what were the signs made out of?
Oh, they were just made out of cardboard.
So there's probably not any around.
No, they'd be kind of really antique. And it was very interesting to watch him go up and down. And of course, kids. And when he'd go to the house and make a delivery, well, they'd just go in there and take an ice pick and chip and get all the ice and eat it. I remember they. That was quite something. He had time keeping the kids off the wagon. But those things are just things that's gone and won't be anymore. And I'm sure that this generation has other things they think of. But it seemed like our small farms are leaving, I'd say that. That's one of the sad things I see about the community. That's all. It's the small farms are leaving. We'd have no more small farms. And we don't have time anymore for each other. We don't have time to talk. We don't have time for communicating with each other, like family reunions. This type of thing. They had just outings, you know, people would go out and sit and talk and so forth. We're too busy. The world's got so busy, it doesn't have time to share it with its neighbor or with anyone. This is the saddest thing that I see happening to the community, and that's happening, of course, all over the world, I'm sure, everywhere. But I notice that more, of course, as an artist, I see, and I have time to look and to stop and see where other people don't. And people really don't have time to see what's around them or what they're even involved with. Most people don't even recognize what colors they're even looking at in the surroundings. They're so busy. They couldn't tell you what color the tree is or anything. It's in their own yard or anything. So they...
Tape 2, side 1 of an interview with Russell McClanahan.
Dryers, they've got electric stoves, and just everything on earth you can think of. And a woman today is the busiest thing on earth. She doesn't have time for anything. And, you know, of course, back when I was a boy, her mother had time for her children. And she had done all that. I don't see how they done it. They must be a different woman or something. I don't know what it was. But people are getting too busy to talk to each other and communicate. And I think they're losing a lot because I don't know anything. I don't know what we're gaining, by the way. The old saying, the best things in life are free, is pretty good. Pretty good. Because the things that we enjoy are health and contentment and so forth. You can't buy them. There's no way to buy them. And it's created within us. And if we destroy it, well, it's gone. So that's one of the sad things I see happening in the community. People don't have time to even speak. Just throw their hand up or holler at you, but even the cities, they don't do that. I go to visit my son, and they don't know, people next door don't even know each other. I mean, they're total strangers. We should be more concerned with each other, and we should have more time for each other. You got anything else you want to ask me about or anything? That's the only thing I see happen to our community is that. That's, mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's going on pretty much the same.
Decided which films to show or what kind of arrangements you made. With you know, how you bought the film or rented the film or whatever.
From the companies? Then we could go through and select films. They'd have a good film come out. The movie, of course, companies are pretty sharp. And they're not going to let you go through and get the cream and not take some Blue John. You know what the Blue John is. So they would put them in groups sometimes. And you'd have to take a bad one or two with a good one, see? And you'd have to buy group A or B or something like this, and they wouldn't sell them no other way. You'd have to buy them in groups.
How much?
And the magazine section today, I mean, this is some of the things that happened today, I understand, some of the pornography and so forth we have. That's why it's in some of the stores and some places it is. Because of the fact that's what the magazine companies do. They push it on. They make them take it. They have to take the good with the bad with the good, see?
Mm-hmm.
This happens. And the man that's running the place is not really to blame about it. Because it's put on him that way. But then they didn't have the type of movies they have now. They were all good, clean movies, and they were family-type movies.
Just rent it for a certain period of time?
Yes, we would pay like $35, $40, $50 for a film, depending on the time we run it, like 2 days. Of course, they've gone up considerable now. They run most of them now, percentage pictures. When I say percentage, they get 60, you get 40. if it's a good one. If it's better, if it's a real good pig, you get, they get 80, you get 20 or something. They range all that out. But in those days, of course, you could buy pictures much better. We had no competition. They come in here and we could say, well, we'll give you $35 or $40 for this picture. Well, they couldn't put it to us and say, well, we're going to give it to another fellow over here at Richmond or somewhere, because nobody could travel that distance, you know. By the way, that's something else. I remember them roads from here in Richmond, you just couldn't go. You had to go creek bed near Winchester. But nobody could travel any distance then, see, and that was... So.
What are some of the films that were very popular here that you recall?
Oh, most of them, like on all Saturday film, we'd have to run westerns. You just run western pictures on Saturday. Then our Sunday pictures would be more of a love story type, family life. But Saturdays were strictly western, shoot 'em up westerns.
Did you have a matinee?
Oh yeah, we started 10 in the morning, run all the way through till 12 at night. We had a midnight show. We called it a midnight show. We started at 10 and run to 12. Then during the week, you could scatter out your other pictures, but it was definitely a western on Saturday, and then some nice love kind of like scene on Sundays. And of course, people then, that wasn't in the movies, we wasn't in television, anything to go to then, and they'd come to the movies, and it was a very nice place to come. I'm not saying we have a lot of good shows today, and we show a lot of good shows. Walt Disney's then, they didn't have any, but they come in later, were very popular. Elvis Presley was, I guess, tops of what we ever done, anything in movies. Just fill the house every time we had a movie here. Just run it over. Girls with Faint Nile and everything. It's very, you know, interesting that some of that. They stand up and scream, just fall over. We'd have to go carry them out. Put wet towels on and everything. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but it's the truth. I don't know whether they would all built up before they went in there or what. And we've had to carry several out of the show. And take them back, put wet towels on them. Me and he'd come on and go to sing, and they just fall over. And they just holler and go on. We'd have to go down and get them to be quiet.
Did you show newsreels?
Had newsreels, yeah. I forgot about that. We had newsreels. No television, of course. We'd have it usually a week late. You know, the news would be a week late, but we that was a good thing. We had that on, usually
on
Sundays.
Where did you get those from?
Well, ours came out of Cincinnati. We done all our booking out of Cincinnati. And they was a week late. But all the newsreels, films all over the world, we'd have filming, you know. Anything happening next week, you'd catch it at the movie, right? It's like TV, you know. Yeah, that was very interesting. Yeah, I remember that. Since I had forgotten about that. But that was very interesting. It was called newsreel. That's what it was, weekly newsreel. And that was set up on so much week, you know, we just paid weekly on that. I don't recall what it was, probably $10-$12 or something, but at that time. But that was very interesting. That would draw a lot.
When did the newsreel stop?
I don't recall exactly. It's just, no, way before that. I'd say when newspapers probably got pretty good or something to come in. But anyway, I don't recall. They didn't last too long. They faded out pretty. But they were awfully good when they were in. I remember a lot of good scenes and all so forth. They'd have all some of them right on the spot. You know, things that happened. They're very interesting.
Do you remember the first television set in Irma?
Oh yes, very well. In fact, I remember when I was a boy, just nobody hardly even had a radio. I remember you using. Earphone radio, and we'd go to somebody's house and everybody sit around and listen to the radio, just like we do TV now. Everybody just one radio and everybody sit around in. And the Grand Ole Opry is the first thing I heard on the radio, I remember, and I just couldn't believe it, you know. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. And TV,
who had the first TV, recall?
Well, I don't know. I was doing a lot of traveling, of course, then, and everything. I probably saw TV in some city or something, I'm saying, first.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and I have done a lot of traveling. Of course, my wife and I have some. I'd say I saw it in some city or something, but I don't recall where I remember seeing the first. But I just couldn't hardly believe it, you know, until it kind of broke in on, I guess. But
when did you start noticing this affecting your movie business?
Well, it did immediately. After the first, it took 3 or 4 years, really, before it started affecting it. And then it just, drastically fell off. After they got quite a few of them out, we closed down a couple of houses. Of course, I'm trying to think, I'd say about 3 or 4 years after they started putting, where they got so they could, some of the people could buy them. And the bars got them, you know, in different places of entertainment and so forth. Thought I might say they kind of started slowing down then.
You said you owned 2 or 3 theaters.
We had 3 here in town one time.
Three in Irving?
Yeah, Irving. Had a drive-in and then and 2 on Main Street here in Irving town. That's how good it was one time. We run. But
you still own the, how many do you own now?
Just one. Just own one now on Main Street here. Called New Irving Theater.
What kind of movies do you show now?
We don't show anything but family movies. We don't show any X-rated or anything. My mother is still, she's in charge. My father's died, and she won't run anything but this, and we encourage, we don't run anything but just family movies. That's all. We don't have any X-rated or any other type.
Is that still profitable then?
Oh yes, we run a lot of Walt Disney's and so forth, but we don't operate every day. We just operate on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. And of course, we own the building, and my brother and I kind of take care of ourselves, and we don't have any overhead, and so otherwise, I doubt if we could run it. But it's profitable the way we run it because of, we just all kind of take, and my sister. She sells tickets, and so we all just kind of chip in our time, and it makes a little money that way, being that we've already got it paid for and so forth. Otherwise, I doubt if it would.
You mentioned the roads were non-existent way back in the days. Was Irving sort of isolated except for the railroad?
Yeah, kind of isolated. You just couldn't hardly get in and out. It's just an all-day's trip to go to. Well, to Lexington back is an all-day trip. That's absolutely, you couldn't get there and back hardly all day.
And
Winchester, And Winchester, you had to go up a creek bed and everything else to get to Winchester. You just couldn't hardly get there.
What creek bed was that?
Well, that was White Oak out here. We just had to go up White Oak, off and on White Oak, a long way, you know, go to Winchester.
When the creek was low, I presume.
Well, it's low. Well, you couldn't go. It just couldn't travel. And then, of course, they fixed all these roads. Drowning Creek Hill down here was terrible. My mother told me when she came here, coming up the hill, she had to be drug out of the mud hole 3 times in a car. She had to get a mule, some mule there. He drug her out 3 times before she got to the top of Drowning Creek Hill. The main highway. I'm talking about the main highway. She had it. He drug her out of the mud hole 3 times before she got to the top of the hill. So you see, that's the main highway. You know, on, so we can't hardly imagine it today, but things have really changed.
You were driving when you were 12?
Yeah, 12 and 13, yeah. Yeah, the kids drove in. See, you just drove, you know, everybody was, it was big enough. I was driving a car when I was 12, 13 years old. But I don't remember being in law against it then. I don't know. If you had a car, you know, you could just drive it. I don't recall being in law against it. Everybody drove in. They didn't, you've had no license. Then they come up to license and so forth and test. No. Yeah. I done most of my courting in a Model A, not a Model T now, but a Model A for it. And one of the things that was kind of interesting. Then we would, you had a little spark you'd push up on, and it would just chuckle, 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 real slow. And we would drive up the street, another fellow and I would, trying to get the girls' attention. See, this how slow we'd go on the motor, just barely move, you know, waving the girls. It's a much different day. The speed, you know, but then you just see how slow you'd go up the street. Rode a lot of bicycles in. You see, I had a lot of bicycles. That's something else. Of course, I see them riding bicycles now. But when I was a boy, we'd done a lot of bicycle riding. But the community's pretty much the same, I'd say. But I guess that's unusual because some of the things are changing in the world very fast. Is there any other questions there you have we can talk about?
I don't want to. This is about riding through the county on horseback.
Yeah, I rode from one end of the county to the other on horseback. And when I was younger, of course, you couldn't get over the road. You'd have to ride on horseback. And one of the amazing things then that they don't have now, seem like, was wherever dinner time come, if there's a house close by, you just go over and knock on the door, and they just talk a few minutes, they just invite you in to eat, and you just go in and eat. Just everybody, when dinner time come, anybody that's talking to, just come on in, let's have dinner. And we just eat where we supper called us, or if you got hung up somewhere and couldn't get back or something, they just stay all night with them, you know. It wasn't like it is now. Everybody had time to talk, glad to see you, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I rode all through this country on horseback. I spent quite a few nights out, you know, just to get out and stay at places. But it's very interesting. The people in those days were glad to see strangers come through, or people they knew, just somebody come through and talk to. Mm-hmm. Sit up way up in the night talking, you know, things that happened in town and so forth, and things that happened in the family. They just, everybody had time to talk. And they tell stories. I remember they used to tell all kinds of stories, and the kids was all interested in the older people telling stories. They'd sit around and listen. And that's kind of different from today.